thankfully. In Jefferson County, we have diagnosed 4,770 cases of COVID-19. That puts our case rate at 715 per 100,000, which is a small decrease from where we were before, moving in the right direction, but still quite high. Our percent positivity is 15%. We have no one currently hospitalized, but we did have one of our residents hospitalized over the weekend for a total of 135 hospitalizations. Thankfully, that person has gotten better and gone home. We've had no additional deaths due to COVID-19 in Jefferson County. So we've had 30 deaths so far in this pandemic response. In Clallam County, we are, my staff member is currently calculating our cases and case rates as we speak, and so they will send those to me shortly. But we have five people currently hospitalized for COVID-19 for a total of 405 hospitalizations. We unfortunately have had one additional death, up to 117 deaths in Clallam County. This person was vaccinated and boosted. He had not had his second booster, and he was in his 80s and had multiple underlying conditions. So unfortunately, I think that does highlight the critical nature of the second booster for those over 65. The most important thing you can do to reduce your risk of severe disease is to get vaccinated and boosted. So that's three shots for everyone five and up, four shots if you're over 65. It's kind of the easy numbers to keep track of where you are on the vaccine status. But we do think if you're over 65 at this point, we are starting to see a rise in severe disease, especially in those over 65 who have underlying conditions. So if you are in that group, really important to move forward with getting that second booster. Everyone else, we're not really seeing any evidence for the need for an additional booster. You certainly can get it if you're over 50. There's just not a lot of evidence that it's necessary right now. So in our region, we're still seeing case rates quite high, but starting to see a downtrend, which is very hopeful. We still are not seeing that overwhelming surge of severe disease, but if you are high risk yourself, if you have underlying conditions and are over 65, really important to do all you can to protect yourself from COVID-19. And of course, the best way to protect yourself besides getting vaccinated is to wear a mask when you're in indoor spaces, particularly a high quality mask. We're still not seeing significant outdoor transmission related to these variants. So it's still very safe to go out, have a barbecue, all the things that many of us did over the weekend. You just want to make sure and put that mask on when you move into an indoor space. I want to take just a brief moment to talk about something that's not COVID-19, and then we can get into questions, which is that we have had our first flock of birds in Jefferson County diagnosed with avian influenza. So there will be a press release about that going out shortly in Jefferson County. We've had two flocks already in Clallam County diagnosed with avian influenza. We are seeing a lot of it in our kind of fly region, where the birds travel through our region. Thankfully, avian influenza, this strain that we're seeing right now, is very unlikely to transmit to humans. We've been monitoring thousands of people who had close contact with their birds over recent months in our state and around the country. And we've only had one case of a person who contracted avian influenza from a flock of birds. So I don't think that it is a significant human health concern in our region right now, but it can be very serious for birds and for poultry farmers in particular. So the best thing to do to protect your birds from contracting avian influenza is to reduce their mixing with other birds, particularly wild birds. The thing that we're seeing a lot right now is birds that interact with wild birds, wild waterfowl, basically. So if you have a pond on your property, and your birds are interacting with ducks or other migratory species, that's where we're seeing a lot of that, that infection happen. And so reducing interactions between your birds and other birds, both commercial farming birds or just wild birds traveling through your catchment area, is the most important thing. Our staff are working very closely with the family whose birds were affected and monitoring them very closely to make sure that they don't contract avian influenza. But so far, we have not seen much transmission between birds and people. And so with that, I am happy to take any questions.
Can I ask a bird
yeah,
question? So I don't know anything about how severe the birds can be impacted. I mean, how bad are the symptoms? What are the signs? I have a small flock. I mean, what am I looking for as a keeper of a small flock of birds?
So many of us do. We're in a rural area, and so a lot of us have birds. Unfortunately, the primary sign of avian influenza in your flock is a sudden die-off of many birds. So it's very, very severe. Anyone who keeps chickens knows that sometimes they just die and we don't know why. But if an individual losing a chicken or two, wouldn't really raise a lot of red flags. But if you had a sudden die-off of multiple birds, more than two, that would raise alarm bells for avian influenza. And you would want to actually report it to WSDA, and they'll come and perform testing on your birds. That's the primary way that we see this happen. Certainly, mm-hmm. The other thing that you'd watch out for is kind of respiratory illness in your birds. So if suddenly your birds are kind of sneezing, coughing, that's atypical among birds, and that would raise suspicion as well.
Thank you. I've just never seen it. So
yeah, and thankfully most of us hopefully won't. The best protection is really to reduce their interaction with other birds. The most stringent recommendations you'll see out of WSDA tell you to kind of bring all of your birds indoors. For many people who are practicing free range practices with their chickens, that's not really acceptable for them. But if you can, make sure that they are not interacting with wild birds to the extent possible. So making sure that ponds and things, they're separated from those. That's really where we're seeing this cross-pollination happen, and reducing kind of other bird feeders in your yard. So primarily focusing on your birds, feeding your chickens or your ducks or anything like that, and not having bird feeders that are attracting wild birds to that same space.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
No worries.
I saw Greg. Question. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Very. I've never seen it either. I'm glad that we don't have to go home and try to mask our turkeys. So
that would not look well.
Yeah. I have a couple. It's sad about the avian flu, but COVID has unfortunately reared its head in our house again. Coming down for presumably a second time. The first time we didn't have enough tests and to really keep at it. And so I guess I wanted to, after action, our response as a household with you really quickly, sure. If that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
We luckily have, 10 free tests a month. So lots of testing before anybody goes out, and her isolation regimen is fairly clear. And we've talked a lot about it. Mm-hmm. We had some, I guess, internal conversations that were not at all clear about how we should proceed over the holiday weekend. It seems like our family gets this over holiday weekends. Last time it was great. This time it was 4th of July. And I'm always looking for an excuse not to go to a fireworks show. So that was good. But we did have quite a few gatherings. And what we operated under was basically don't go to any congregate gatherings inside. Mm-hmm. And I tried to make us wear masks the whole time, even while outside. And and that's what the CDC recommends. I didn't find a lot of local recommendations for how to handle kind of the quarantine side instead of isolation side. Mm-hmm. And I guess I was wondering if you could just go into what is the best practices for a family that's dealing, because this is what lots of people are dealing with is, sure. Someone's sick again. What should we do while hopefully not shutting down life for 15 days? So can you tell us what we should do and what we absolutely should not do?
Absolutely. So just for the benefit of everyone, we'll start with isolation. So isolation is the person in your family who has COVID. That person should, as much as possible within the household, try to isolate from other family members. So if there's a separate bedroom that they can sleep in, that's the most important. And then when they have to be in common areas, if they do, most of the time we do, then everyone wear a mask when they're in those common areas. That's kind of one of the biggest things you can do. Opening windows, adding filtration to your house can reduce transmission to your other family members. As a person who is positive, you can still go outside. You can go for a run and a walk. That is all fine. You can even go to places where other people are, but just keep your distance away from other people. So I wouldn't want to see someone who is positive going into a crowded parade and being right next to other people. That would make me a little nervous. But if you wanted to go stand a little bit back and observe fireworks displays, for example, that would be okay, as long as you keep your distance from others. And I think always good practice, if you have COVID-19, to wear a mask whenever you might come within close proximity of other people, even if you're outside. So for instance, if you're just walking around, you don't need to wear a mask. But if you were going to be going someplace where you're likely to get much closer to other people, trying to go to a fireworks display or something like that, I'd wear a mask just as good practice, but mostly keep your distance. If you've got good airflow, you're not going to give COVID to anybody. For family members, if the family members are up to date on their vaccinations, so they're vaccinated and boosted, you actually don't have to quarantine anymore. You can go out and about in your day, but we are seeing a lot of breakthrough infections. So if you have a family member who's positive, I would really strongly recommend wearing masks when you are anywhere, when you're anywhere close to other folks, if you've got a family member at home, because you could contract it and then go on to pass it on to other people. Really primarily talking about indoor spaces there, really still not seeing a lot of need for masking in outdoor spaces, but you can still go to work even if you have a family member who's positive, if you're up to date on your vaccinations. You can still go to the store. And in fact, that's really helpful because then you can get the things that your family member needs. So isolation doesn't have to be quite as isolating as it was before. But certainly if you develop symptoms, we want you to get tested right away. And if you're vaccinated and boosted, as we've talked about on this show before, you may develop symptoms before you turn positive. So keep testing if you keep having symptoms. And even if you don't develop symptoms at all, we want you to test again at day five. Remember that we do hope that people kind of have a little stash of tests at home, but we also have tests at Jefferson County Public Health and still at our libraries. You can pick them up at the window if you've been exposed, or if you have a family member who's positive, or if you have symptoms, just call ahead. Don't go into the library if you have symptoms to test for COVID-19, and we can support you with those here. Any other particular questions that came up in your family?
No, I think that addresses them. And I will say it was much different experience having a multitude of tests. So, you know, I took another test this morning to feel comfortable about coming into work and wearing a mask whenever I'm not, you know, alone in my office. That answered my questions. Thank you.
Great. Yeah.
I've got a good question. Any update on reinfection timing with different variants? I'm hearing that the 3 months get kind of scaled back to 6 weeks, 30 days. What's the window that we're seeing currently?
So right now we're really not seeing any reinfections within the 30-day window. So you can feel quite confident on not getting reinfected in that first 30 days. And you are still unlikely to get reinfected in the first 90 days, but we have started to see some reinfections happen, particularly with BA4 and 5. Those seem to be the ones that are giving us the shorter window of reinfection. And primarily when we're seeing those shorter window reinfections where you're getting reinfected just 35 days after the last time you had COVID, which I want to just acknowledge is very frustrating if you've already been through isolation very recently. That's primarily something we're seeing in people who are not vaccinated, so whose only protection is their recent infection. We're not seeing that shortened window as much in people who are fully vaccinated and then have gone on to be infected. I think as a community, as people, we can feel really confident that we're not going to get COVID again within 30 days. It's possible to start getting it again within that 30 to 90 day window. And so when you're outside of that 30 day window, really important to just wear a mask when you're in indoor spaces to reduce your likelihood of getting COVID and giving it to others. Now, thankfully, you're very unlikely to get severely ill. And by severely ill, I mean hospitalized or die due to COVID-19. But we still don't want to give it to anybody else. And so that's why it's really important to wear masks in indoor spaces to reduce the probability of transmitting it to someone who could get severely ill.
I have one other question, I guess a follow-up, and that's, you know, it was really convenient to report my daughter's case at on the online portal at Public Health. Mm-hmm. That worked great. I'm just wondering, do you think people are still reporting them as much? I'm just wondering, I forget the word that you used for how
Case ascertainment.
Yeah. Do you have updated information that allows you to modify what you think that our local case ascertainment rate is?
We're still getting pretty good reporting in Jefferson County. Part of how we determine that is our percent positivity, and then also the percent of our cases that are coming in through the online form. So initially about 50 to 60% of our cases were coming in through self-report. Now we're seeing that drop a little bit to closer to 40%. And so we think our case ascertainment is a little bit lower, but not by a lot. Jefferson County residents are still doing a really good job of letting us know that they have COVID. And we think it's also helpful that it's an easy to access online form to do that. Any other questions from the commissioners? All right, we only have a few questions from the public, and I just want to update Clallam County did send in their case rate today, and it is 737 per 100,000. So very similar to what we're seeing in Jefferson County. So looking at the KPTZ questions, one question asked if we will be reporting the water sampling. So we are moving forward with sampling basically our sewer for COVID-19, particularly the Port Townsend sewer. Most of the rest of us are on septic, and unfortunately we can't monitor those. It has taken a while to get that going. That's a state-sponsored program, and we are just now receiving our test kits into Jefferson County to do this sampling. So we've not been able to report it yet because we haven't been able to do the sampling, but as soon as we get the sampling started and submitted to the state, then we will be reporting that probably on KPTZ and also on our website. So we'll let you know once we get that data up and running. The other question we had was kind of just some concern about our move to weekly case reporting and whether or not it's kind of up to date enough to make decisions. And so to answer that, I want to share that we have actually always had a small delay baked into our case rates. Even though we report them daily, they're actually not today's numbers. There's a delay of, over the course of the pandemic, it's ranged from 1 day to up to 5 days, depending on how fast we're getting our PCR test results back. So they're never actually just today's cases. It's based on the delays that are baked into lab testing, because it takes a while to get test results back. And I can definitely see how, since we've gotten used to following daily cases, that it would be concerning to see that delay start to get baked in and to only get cases once a week. I would say that as a person who studies these numbers and lives in these numbers, I feel very comfortable analyzing them week over week and not daily. As an epidemiologist, I actually don't pay that much attention to how our cases change day to day, because so many other variables can affect that. So living in these numbers, I can tell you that our cases always range over the week. And the primary driver of that is when test sites are open. And when school is open, because school is one of our big drivers of testing. It's also just human behavior. So people don't like to go get tested on Friday, and then they all come in and get tested on Monday. So we tend to see surges related to that as well. So when I look at these numbers, I really only look at weekly trends, because day over day just has a lot, far too much noise in it. So I do think with the weekly reporting that we have enough information there to make good decisions. We've also seen our case rates largely stabilize over several weeks. So we're not seeing really rapid shifts in cases. Of course, if we did start to see that, we could report on that more quickly. The only other thing I want to let folks know is that hospitalizations and deaths are updated as they happen. So those kind of more severe findings, those are updated over the week. It's only the pure case numbers that are updated once a week. And I also want you to know that we still receive them. So we still receive daily updates so that we can do the things that are very time sensitive, like emergent outbreak investigations. So we'll still get the cases, we still analyze them, see where they are, and if we see anything concerning, we jump on it right then. But for the weekly reporting, it comes weekly. And we do add them up on Friday and then report them on Monday. The primary reason for that is there are often delays in cases coming from the state. So particularly on Monday, even when we were trying to calculate them on Mondays, often the state numbers aren't even here yet. And so it really affects the quality of our numbers when we're calculating them on Mondays. So that's how we picked Friday. And we are trying to not have all the staff work through the weekend anymore. We do still have myself and at least one other member on call for the weekend, but we try not to have everybody work 7 days a week anymore. It's just not sustainable for our tiny team. One last question. This person says they are they and their partner are in their 70s. They're vaccinated and boosted. We wear masks in public and only get together with a few close friends without masks. So sounds like they're being very safe. The middle of August, we are planning to get on an airplane for the first time since the pandemic and visit grandchildren. Congratulations. We have been waiting to get our second booster so that it will be most effective during the time that we travel. When do you recommend getting it for maximum effectiveness? And so your best is to get it 2 weeks prior to your travel. So if you're traveling mid-August, you can get it end of July. You're going to get very well covered for that trip. Very unlikely that you'll contract COVID-19 on that journey when you're in that window. You get your most bang for your buck from your booster. Wait 2 weeks after you got it, and then for the next 4 weeks, that's when you're getting your most protection from that second booster. So I would wait just a little longer towards the end of July. Keep doing the safe things you're doing so you don't get COVID between now and then, and you should be able to enjoy your vacation. So with that, any other questions that inspired in our team? Okay, I will pass it over.
Thank you, Dr. Berry.
I don't have anything for you all today. Fortunately, I think it's a good thing when news is this slow. So I'm happy to take questions if you have any for emergency management, but otherwise, no report from me.
Okay, wow. 10:10 and we're
I'll ask one just to okay. Can't let Willie get off without saying anything.
Throw me a bone, thank you.
this is just to continue an ongoing conversation we're having about FEMA grants for capacity building, down in Brennan specifically, and just wondering how is it time to have those conversations yet?
Yeah, so the there are FEMA hazard mitigation grants on a regular basis coming out. During the COVID-19 pandemic, though, that funding has been a little bit smaller than usual since there's been so much federal money flowing to local municipalities via CARES, ARPA, and some other grants. So we're always continuing to keep an eye out here at DEM for grant opportunities for both ourselves and for our partners. So we haven't seen anything particularly fitting this project come down the pipeline as of yet, but we're keeping our eye out, and we'll be sure to check in with our partners when we do have that. One big thing I will update the board on is we are interviewing candidates for our vacant position here in DEM, who will be helping with our grant and finance management. So we conducted our first round of interviews over the course of the past 2 weeks, and hope to have that person on. We hope to have them on by yesterday, but sometime within the next month or two. And that'll be a real force multiplier for us to be able to support our partners with some subject matter expertise around that federal funding. So nothing major yet. We're hoping for some based on the winter storm declarations here in a little bit, but the funding has been decreased fairly significantly, but we continue to keep our eyes out.
Thank you, Willie.
Kate?
Yeah, one quick question, Willie. There was a lot of booms last night, but didn't hear a lot of sirens. Can you report anything? Seemed like fairly safe weekend. I imagine you were grateful for the rain on Sunday too.
Yeah. The rain on Sunday was a massive help. I know that it literally rained on some people's plans, and I do feel bad about that. But from a public safety standpoint, it was very welcome. We did hear. I from my place, heard a variety of small fireworks shows. But we at DEM didn't get called out. I'm sure there were a number of responses, but fortunately, it was fairly quiet overall. I do think that is a good opportunity to bring up the fact that I am assuming a lot of folks who had big plans over the course of the weekend, they might have delayed them due to Sunday's rain. With the fourth falling on a Monday, might not have had their celebrations like they would have over the course of the weekend. So I'm assuming a lot of folks have fireworks that they'll be holding on to for use at a later date when the weather is a little better. It is a good reminder that we do have a burn ban, but that is for debris clearing and yard waste only at this point in time. So when you are getting ready to set off your fireworks and have your belated fourth celebration, one, do check your local ordinances first and foremost, so you know where you're setting them off, if they're allowed or not. do pay attention to our local burn ban. Right now, again, it's just yard waste, but as summer goes on, there is a good chance that will be more restricted. So do pay attention to that. And then no matter when or where you are using fireworks, just make sure you're following smart common sense practices. Every year we do see folks celebrating one way or another with fireworks, both of the legal and illegal variety. And the consequences from careless use of those can be pretty devastating. So check your local ordinances, check in with the burn ban, and then make sure you're celebrating responsibly after that. But and we always hate to jinx things by using the Q word, but otherwise a fairly quiet weekend, all things considered.
I'm going to make a small public health plug for safe fireworks usage. So key things to safe fireworks usage is be mindful of what is near you. Nothing that can catch easily on fire. Make sure you're away from structures and large. A lot of people have piles of dry grass right now, staying far away from those. But the most important from an individual health standpoint is being thoughtful about where small children are, and not drinking and setting off fireworks at the same time. That combination is an unfortunate mix, and never ever set off a firework in your hand. I trained at a trauma center and I've seen far too many people have that go wrong. But if you follow those basic principles, you're much more likely to have a fun celebration with your fireworks.
Although as of 9 p.m. this evening is the end of the discharge period for this year. So time is running out to safely set up any fireworks in Washington State.
You can do them again around New Year's Eve, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I was out on the water last night around 9:30, checking the crab pots, getting some crab. Yay! But I saw a number of dispersed firework displays, including some at some of our county parks, which was a disappointment because we were specifically trying to quell those uses of our parks. But anyway, so some concern about that. And then also I have a late breaking COVID update that some of our public works team has contracted COVID and it's affecting the transfer station potentially. So I know our transfer station leader or solid waste leadership is working on covering it, but I just offered myself up tomorrow because I have a light schedule and I love customer service. So anyway, just saying it while there's a lot of people online. If you're planning on going to the transfer station tomorrow, maybe check the county website beforehand or call ahead.
Heidi, can you operate heavy equipment?
No, but I can operate a cash register and a credit card swiper machine.
Yeah. Well, and if they haven't already, certainly make sure they contact our department. There are some critical worker exemptions that we can bring into play if key public functions won't exist if we do a kind of formal isolation and quarantine.
Okay.
And then I just say I misspoke. It's that fireworks are allowed to be discharged till 11 p.m. this evening.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Looked at the WAT or the RCW.
You're at 70.77.395.
Yep. And between the hours of 9 o'clock a.m. and 11 o'clock p.m. on July 5th.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
So I'm just wanting to add that we're going to have an executive session after our workshop on the no shooting area. So we've added an executive session, which we have scheduled for 10:45, assuming we can get that workshop taken care of quickly. So just wanted to add that for the benefit of the public. And
can I add one more thing about, as long as we're talking about fireworks?
Yeah.
I know I worked with Public Works and the port and Fish and Wildlife about the Gardner boat launch that as kind of part of the no shooting area application. We heard a lot about the overuse of that from out of town folks. And we put up temporary signs down there, no camping and such pretty prominently. And I did drive by yesterday. I'm sure it was aided by the rain and hard to really tell causation, but the impact, there weren't, RVs all weekend long kind of clogging up this very close residential road. So it seems as if it was, again, perhaps weather assisted, a success in sort of mitigating that overuse that neighbors had complained about previously in Gardner. So feels like a small win.
That's a good report. Anything else for the good of the order? Well, we've got more of the community with us. Okay, well, Dr. Barry and Willie, you got some time back this morning. Thank you for being here. Let's hope that COVID continues its downtrend or stabilizing. I keep saying after the pandemic, and I'm still optimistic that we'll get to that point, but we'll see you next week.
Are we still in a pandemic? Are we in officially endemic mode?
You know, it's always hard to tell for sure, especially with variants that can come out, but we are moving into a more endemic mode. So yes, I think the pandemic phase of where this really shuts down functions will pass fully at some point. The virus will be with us, but I think the pandemic will pass.
Have you heard any talk, Dr. Barry, about the governors or WHO or other emergency orders being lifted?
I have heard talk, but I've not heard a formal date. So that's something we're watching as well. It has a lot of implications for our response and funding mechanisms as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day. Thanks,
guys. And there's some airtime back for KPTZ. Hopefully they'll play some Bob Marley, which is what I always say. I think we can groove our way out of the COVID update. Just wanting to remind folks who are online that we have added an executive session to this meeting, and it's set to be held from 10:45 to 11:15 regarding potential litigation. So just a reminder. So it's 10:18 and we have 12 minutes until our workshop. We've gotten